afraid to tell the story about your mother.
Right. You know, all little boys in those days used to have these little pocket, little books, cartoon books, things that you today would find on a newsstand. I remember I used to keep it under linoleum in my bedroom. Mind you, no carpet, just linoleum. And one day I went to look for it, and they were gone. I think I was all of 11 years, 12 years old. And for 3 days, I lived in mortal fear that God was going to come down and take me away in the person of my mother. And one day, as I was lying in bed, my bedroom was right off the kitchen, my mother saw me and said, "Bummy, if you're looking for that garbage, I threw it away. The real thing is better."
We called you Bummy.
And I figured for my mother to tell that to me, because one of the things that I never believed, that my mother and father actually had sex.
That's right.
So, my God, at that point I realized I could talk to this lady. You have to understand, growing up on the hill, you develop a sexual awareness that you would not have in a normal circumstance. You saw things down there that you took as a matter of absolute, this is life. But if my children saw it, I'd probably go crazy. It was that kind of environment that I grew up in. I was very, very lucky in my mother. She was my best friend.
How long did your mother live?
She lived until 1967. Both she and my father died in the same year.
1967.
First my father, then my mother. My father died in January, my mother died in October. My mother lived with cancer. We used to go to Riverview to visit my father every day, taking care of him by streetcar. She used to go by streetcar. She would not try and burden me with anything. She would go herself. They used to call her the saint over there. She would go 9 o'clock in the morning and leave there at 10 o'clock at night to take care of my father for something like 2 years. It was something to see.
So how old would she have?
My mother died at the age of 67. My father died at the age of 70.
They certainly do a lot in that number of years. Yeah.
They're remarkable people. My mother, I guess I can never say enough about her. I remember once I came to visit her, and she saw that I had one of those pathological faces, and she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Rita and I had a fight. Rita's my wife." And without blinking an eye, she said, "It had to be your fault." My mother-in-law once said to my wife, "How come I never hear you say anything about Al's mother?" And Rita's reply was, "How can I say anything about her? She thinks I'm perfect." That's the kind of mother I had.
Sounds like my mother. I can't believe this story. They were from Hungary. They couldn't have been.
You were a higher class Jew than I was.
There's so much that we want to get, and we're going to leave some for later on. Let's cover your youth at this time. You graduated from Alderdice.
Right.
Did you know Rita at Alderdice?
No, I met Rita when she was 15 years old, standing on the steps of Beth Sholem or Rosh Hashanah, because everybody used to stand on the steps. Mm-hmm. Nobody went in for services in those days, at least the kids did. And I asked a friend of mine, who was she and who old was she? I was all of 18 at the time, and they said she was 15. I said, I can't date a 15-year-old. I waited 1 year, and I was 19, and she was 16. She was a senior at Alderdice. We went out. I told her I was going to marry her. And we've been going together ever since. I denied her a chance to meet other boys. She can do it now if she wants.
when did you get married?
Reed and I met in 1948, and we were married in 1952, August the 7th.
And was that after your graduate from college?
No, I was in the Air Force at the time.
So so that she, you were married when you were in the Air Force, but she didn't have to go very far away.
No, we were very lucky. Rita was, even before we were married, when I was in my senior year in college, my father had a heart attack, and at the time we found that my father never had hospitalization. Yes. It bankrupted him. I was going to have to pull out of Pitt at the time. Rita was working part-time for Gold Real Estate, and she gave me every nickel she had so I could stay in college. So what do you say to a woman like that?
There aren't too many stories like that.
Well, you don't forget, Sylvia. You don't forget. The child of one's youth is the child of one's, is the bride of one's age. We go, you know, various stages. Now she's my nurse.
You don't look like you need a nurse.
Two quadruple bypasses.
Really? We're going to get all that late. Okay. We're going to sort of do this more chronologically. when you graduated from Autodesk, because it was honor and
honor. No.
How
days,
was your life? What was Autodesk like at that time?
It was the beginning of the... what I used to refer to Alderdice as the only publicly supported private school in the country. Fraternities began to take hold there. I naturally was not part of that group because, A, I did not dress the way they did. I did not talk the way they did. I was not in their world. And I used to, Alderdice would let out at 3:05. I had to be in the store at 3:10. It's a long run.
Mm-hmm.
At the very end of it. I had to start delivering orders. So actually, I was in Alderdice during the war years. My brother was in the service at the time, and I had to deliver the orders. So pushing, or rather, dragging a wagon through the streets of Fort Hill, I became somewhat of a sight because I talked a guy by the name of Al Skirball into selling me his bicycle for $15, which I paid off. I attached my wagon to the bike, and I used to deliver orders that way.
Al Skirball?
Al Skirball.
B-O-L-L?
Yes.
Was he a fellow student of yours?
He was about 4 years older than I was. He was going into the service at the time. We still see each other, and I still remark that if it wasn't for him, I would never have had a bike.
Mm-hmm. He's really had a lot of interesting experiences. Okay, so you graduated from high school and you worked in your father's store. Now, where did you...
I never went into 12th grade, by the way, to tell you that. In those days, if you had the academic standing, you'd go into Pitt instead of going into 12th grade. I was accepted to go into Pitt at that point. Fortunately...
So you left Alderdice in the 11th grade, but you never had a graduation?
Never had any of the thrills and the joys. Actually, I remember at my high school, I went back to my high school graduation after I finished my year at Pitt, went back to the year of graduation. I remember Audrey Gollum, I'll never forget her, she said, do you have a cousin who goes to Pitt? No, it's my id.
I didn't know about that. Was that because Pitt was anxious for students?
No, that was in order to... that you would get a year of college in before you were drafted. To my good luck, so somewhat, the war ended the year I was at Pitt.
Which was what, 1945?
1945. So I didn't have, as long as I was in school, they were given blanket deferments and they ended the draft and all that business. And they reinstituted it later on. But I never thought about the draft as such. They would never have had the draft then. If I could have, I would have enlisted at the age of 10 to fight Nazi Germany.
You were interested in history, you said. Right. When you went to Pitt, were you going to be a history major?
I was a history major pre-law. I was one of those few people at Federal Alderdice who was exempted from taking exams in history. I never took an exam in history.
Because you did so well in science?
That was my field.
Which branch of history?
Which branch? At that point, it was ancient history. I loved ancient history. I loved American history, that was one good thing. Civil War and World War II.
You said that you didn't, you weren't part of the social group or something like that. Was it too partly, I mean, was the attitude in those days the same as it is today? Oh, he's a bookworm, he's
a nerd.
Nerd.
I think I had a little bit of that. It's interesting that today I meet people with whom I went to school who talk about our friendship in high school, and I go home laughing like an idiot to my wife because we never talked to one another in high school. So retroactively, we became friends. Partly because of this position, partly because of my family. It was rather interesting. And you have to keep your perspective in life. You cannot lose sight of perspective of what life is really about.
What was your wife's last name?
Green. Rita Green. She was from Braddock. Her family were jewelers. I probably married the only daughter of a jeweler who was not rich.
How they managed that?
My father-in-law was a remarkable guy. He was eviscerated by the Depression. It tore his guts out. And he never took a chance after that. He struggled in Braddock with family of six children. He never made it. Other people made it. And my father-in-law carried a little bit of guilt. In those days, during the Depression, you bought what you could where you could buy it at the cheapest possible price. There was a farmer in Braddock that used to sell milk. It was unpasteurized milk. You can get the rest of the story. One of my brother-in-laws came down with tuberculosis. Settled in his hip, and I think my father-in-law carried that guilt to his grave.
This was attributed to the milk.
To the milk, tuberculosis.
So did that brother-in-law...
He was one of the unique people. He was one of the experimental children at the Watson home that they gave sulfa drugs to. And it seemed to work for him, but one of the consequences of his treatment was that they kept his foot in a cast. And by the time they took the cast off, the foot was 1 foot shorter than his other foot, so he had an artificial extension. He was a jeweler, too. The whole family was made up of jewelers. My one brother-in-law in Boston, Baltimore, has done very well. It's a unique family. In fact, I just lost a brother-in-law. His brother died 3 months ago from brain cancer. My wife is a remarkable person. I guess I use the word remarkable a hell of a lot. Of the children in her family, she is the one that does the most for her mother. It's called, Rita is the official dumpy.
There's always one.
Yeah, and they dump on her. Rita takes care of her. Rita did not have the greatest of childhoods. I guess I'll have to give it to you this way. Rita's sex education consisted of a statement by my mother-in-law that said, if you ever get into trouble, don't come home. Interesting times. I think my mother-in-law's never going to see this. We're here.
whatever you say is confidence.
I'm telling you too much about that stuff.
It's fascinating. And the idea is that someday someone will listen to this who wants to know what was life like in the 20s and 30s in Pittsburgh for a Jewish family, because they're going to write a book or they're going to do some research.
It was rich. You could say life was very rich.
But this will only be allowed to be heard by researchers.
Okay. I grew up in an atmosphere of a lot of political awareness. Next to our store was a barber shop where all the political extremes would show up to get their hair cut. Everybody would carry on conversations. As a kid, I was involved in all those discussions. I could hold myself with those guys. I was exposed to communists on a scale that you would not believe. I guess I used to laugh like hell when I would meet people who would tell me they feared a communist, but they never knew what a communist looked like. And what the greatest irony were Jewish communists, because to me they were like a contradiction in terms. And even after the Hitler pact with Stalin in 1939, they were still communists. They were still making an alibi for Hitler. Boy, it's fascinating. You found out those who were Jews and those who were not Jews. Jewish radicals in those days were a little different than Jewish radicals today. They used to wait for high holidays to go and disrupt services at Yom Kippur or stand in front of the shul and eat ham and things like that. They were basically verbundes, ultra socialists, and they bordered over into communists. Today they'll be able to do that. In fact, during our time on the Hill, my mother used to prepare food baskets for people who were in jail, kosher food baskets. This, and I found out about this retroactively, because when I came to the Chronicle and my mother would look over the pictures and I would be there, she'd look and say, she'd look at a particular guy and say, I used to send a basket to his father.
Was that on her own or for some organization?
The family would have a doing for
her. Oh, from the grocery store.
The family of the person who was a resident. Like people who used to order, have a fire sale and they had the signs painted before the fire, bootleggers. You have to understand, Jews were involved in those kinds of activities, and I never hid that from anyone. We were not saints. Polsky did not invent Jewish enlisted.
You really have a wide picture. You see everything in a large context.
I was never myopic. I guess it's from a historical context. I learned about people. There's more to people than what comes out of them.
Then, because of what you experienced as a young person, and things turned out okay for you, I mean, are you optimistic about us coming out of all of our terrible
things? Kids will survive. Actually, I have a little axiom that I teach my, tell my children. Everyone I would speak, my children would say, which speech are we going to hear now? Later on in life, they did that, but they weren't afraid. Nor were they ever had cause to be afraid. I am convinced that there is a place in history for the Jewish people, because of all the peoples who existed at the time of the Roman Empire, the Jews are the only ones still around. In the same form they were essentially at that point. There's another little phrase I use in this profession, which drives my social worker friends crazy. But you understand, I'm the only non-social worker that ran a Jewish agency. I used to tell them the trouble with social workers is that they love mankind. They just hate people.
They love
mankind. They just hate people. Mm-hmm. Because they want them to fall into little niches, mm-hmm, and follow patterns. And we were not made that way.
Still going to be on your
youth.
We got a lot of stuff to cover.
It was not a boring
youth. No.
Interesting.
You were on the Hill during the, was that when, say, the jazz
yes,
club?
On Center Avenue and Crawford Street, those places were on, they were mostly black clubs. They were all black clubs. I never went to them because I was too young. My friends didn't go to them because they couldn't afford to go.
I think of August Wilson, you know, that's written all those things about,
yes,
the Hill. And in his plays, he mentions Jewish names because there was a connection.
Yep.
And
the guys
doctor,
I grew up with, one was known as Frog, one was known as Augie.
These were black?
Jews. And if you asked me their name today, I couldn't tell you what their real name was. I never knew their real names. I knew them by their nicknames, as I was known by mine.
Now, what was your nickname?
Whoopi.
You said your parents had this grocery store. Where was the grocery store?
2107 Wiley Avenue.
And at that time, Wiley Avenue was a very
Jewish,
prosperous,
very Jewish area. I grew up across the street from a feed store. Sold feed for horses. So as a kid, we used to go in there and jump up and down on the bales of hay, and go into the bins with where the feed were, and the cockroaches would be coming out of them.
They had a good time.
Was that a Jewish?
It was Jewish on Rice's Feed Store.
Because there were still.
I remember that. God Almighty.
This is interesting. Was there were enough horses around that we needed?
No, until that point, yes.
Yes. What kind of, they were not? They were.
The hucksters. Most of the people who were in business, we used to deliver by horse and wagon.
I remember seeing hucksters.
Oh, yeah, the whole horse and wagon business. My great thrill was that some of these guys, used to be a family of the name of Brown. What the heck was the other one? They were partners in the banana business. And every so often, they would take me on the horse and wagon and would go around the block. And that was my big thrill in life. To go for an automobile ride, my God, to go out to the county airport, that was the end of the world for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was living.
I always wondered, who cleaned up the streets? Did anybody ever clean up the streets?
No, they never cleaned up the
streets.
You must
have smelled all the time.
You never noticed it. Today, I would notice it. My wife for sure would notice it. But you never pay any attention to that stuff. Because, you know, it was there, and it would rain, and it would disintegrate, and you never pay any attention. I guess that's one of the reasons we were so sickly in those days. Or we had a natural immunity. One of the two, I don't know.
Well, this was almost like the end of the Victorian period when you read books about London and the horses and the buggies and the whole thing. So it really lasted.
Into the 30s, really. I remember my uncle had a car. My two uncles had a car. My uncle used to take me occasionally when his wife didn't know for a ride. I grew up in a family where there was a hell of a lot of hostility between the various branches. They were afraid that my mother was going to ask for an inheritance from my grandfather, and my mother had such pride that she never asked for a dime when he died.
This was your mother's family?
All my father's family were in Russia.
And your mother's family, what name?
Anisman. In fact, David Anisman is a cousin three times removed from me. And I acquainted him with his family history because he came from the other side. His grandfather was my grandfather's brother. And they hated, there was absolute hostility there, and we never had anything to do with anybody.
Now, you mean he's around here now?
David is very active in Federation. He and Merrill are very up-and-coming leaders in Federation. Great people.
And would they be your age or younger?
No, they're younger than me.
I'll
tell you a story. One thing my grandmother used to do, we lived on the hill.
Now this is your grandmother Anisman.
Grandmother Anisman. By the way, she used to prohibit my grandfather from walking in on Wiley Avenue in front of our store. He had to go through the alley to avoid being called in by my mother into the store. But since I was a grandchild, my grandmother, bless her little wooden heart, on Erev Yom Kippur, we used to shlug Kippuris. You know what shlugging Kippuris is?
I heard that expression.
Okay. Shlugging Kippuris was when a woman in the family would take her grandchildren and take a chicken and hold the chicken over the heads of the children and wave the chicken over the heads of the children, all the sins and all the evil that would befall that child should happen to that chicken. Then we used to eat chicken.
Now, how do you call it slugging?
Slugging Kippuris.
I heard the expression, but I don't remember it.
It's being a sacrifice. Kippuris.
Kippuris
is
like
a sacrifice.
You're
slugging. You're slugging up the sacrifice.
And is that Yiddish?
That's. You know what? I don't know whether it's Yiddish or Hebrew. I think it's basic. It is, I would more say it's a combination of a Hebrew word that they made into Yiddish. Nobody practices that today, not even the Lubavitch. It is so primeval, so archaic. so superstitious.
She would put the
hold the chicken over your head, and I remember as a little boy looking up and saying, please God, don't let that chicken mate on me.
It was alive then.
It was a live chicken.
Oh.
Ah. Oh, yes. I tell my children about that story, and my daughters and my son would look at me with utter disbelief. My one daughter said that's why she became a Reform rabbi.
Well, we're going to get to your daughter.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have a lot on them.
Look at
them. They're real with me. And my son. My son's an Orthodox Jew.
Let's not get too far ahead.
Okay.
Now, how are we doing tonight?
Yeah, we still have about 5 more minutes.
All right, let's hear more about the Hill and the 30s, because that, you know, a lot of people do not know about that. The shul you went to was on the Hill. You know, with remember the rabbi's name?
No. I don't even remember we had a rabbi. I know we used to have a cousin for on holidays who used to cry better than any human being I ever heard in my life. The various members led it. My father would sit listening, going through the service, and if the reader made a mistake, my father used to interrupt him.
Mm-hmm.
He had memorized. My father should never have been in business. He should have been a scholar. That's what he should have done all his life. He came from a family of rabbis.
Oh, you didn't tell us that. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about that grandfather up there.
You know what? It's coming towards the end, so let's stop. It's an interesting thing to get.